When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
On Tuesday's episode of The Goody Goody, we talked about this. You're not 100% gay, I'm not 100% gay.
Yeah.
Sabrina said this.
Being desired is a turn on, and that is one goody goody lesson.
Joel Kim said this.
I want to fuck you, or I want you to fuck me.
Let's get back into it now. It's the rest of the chat.
Every time I do, like, catch feelings for somebody, I turn into a fucking crazy person. I hate...
Yeah, it's so
I
hard.
Do not like spending time with myself when I am, like, obsessed with someone else. And I feel like until I...
You've got to, like, trick the... It's, like, the same... Isn't it similar to, like, when you first started showcasing, were you weird? Because I was so fucking weird when I first started, like, just for laughs is here. Yep. Just act cool. I would fucking...
It is. I tell people this every year when they are auditioning. I'm like, the year you don't want it, the year you don't think you need it, that's the year you'll get it. Because that's what happened to me.
So
yeah.
True.
Like, everything true, I've true. Ever... Pilot
and similarly,
season, it was
similarly to this, to getting... Yeah, for us booking shows this pilot season, it is like we had other things going on.
Yeah. It totally felt... Sort of just like another, like last year, I remember I tested for a pilot that didn't go. And it was like, this is going to change my life. This is going to be everything. Like, this is it. And then, like, it didn't happen. And I was like, well, fuck. And now this year rolled around and I was like, whatever. You know, like, I was like, if this, like, there's like a million other things that I'm trying to, like, spin plates in the air right now. And then it happened and it's great. And I'm like, I'm happy. And, you know, I'm sad that, like, it's not like a wild success in the ratings, but I'm also sort of like, you got to be on a fucking network TV show.
That's pay off your loans.
Pay off your student loans.
Also, just, I think that getting cast on something that's so big. It really, like, for me, the feeling that I have is, like, regardless of what happens with this show, I'm now...
Well, yours is going to run for the next 10 years. You're locked in.
Your voice to a little pigeon's ear, and the pigeon is the Lord, and the Lord loves me. But there's something about being... Yeah, just getting cast by someone else that, like, now when I pitch a show and I have myself, like, when I sold my show to Fox, it was like I would have to audition to be the to play the part of me.
Yeah.
Now I can, like, build it into a thing when I write something. Well, you sold a show to Quibi, which is cool.
Yeah.
And it's set in Fire Island. And I can't wait to see it. And that was, like, already drawn in that you would be a part of it.
Yeah. But I mean, they're taking so many, like, wild swings because they're a new company. Like, it felt like less of a dogfight. But yeah, there's definitely, like,
well,
I sold my show to Fox years ago,
yes,
it was also the same thing where I'd have to test for my own show.
Yeah.
And that was wild.
Yeah. So we've been acknowledged. Congratulations to us. And also the lesson around not giving a shit. We talk about, I think that, like, because the podcast is The Goody Goody, and I'm just trying to get, like, the goody goody, which was, whether it's, like, gossip or, like, so far, I consider everything we've said to be so goody goody. Sex chats, drug chats, deeper gender poly chats. But, like, something that oftentimes I end up circling around is this balance of, like, giving a shit versus not giving a shit.
Yeah.
And, like, when to push on the gas of either, but it always feels like the conclusion is erring on the side of not giving a shit.
Always,
especially when it comes to spending time thinking about what people think or what people will think.
Well, and I mean, that's the crazy thing is that it's like so easy for me to sit here now and be like, ha ha ha, my show is the lowest rated in NBC history. But that is like, I mean, I was like 2 days after the premiere being like, well, fuck, like this is going to ruin me. Like, I'm over before it began. Like, I gave a shit a lot, but I think that's the balance. I think, like, it's like, give yourself a day, give yourself 2 days to care a lot. and then move on. And that's what I have to do. And like the thing is I don't know what's going to happen. You know, like nobody's watching other than CBS. Like no one's watching live TV.
No.
All of these shows, like they gave, you know, like a lot of shows are lowly rated and then like everyone watches it on Hulu and Netflix and it finds its audience. Like who knows what's, I'm speaking like I know the conclusion of this, but like I don't know what's going to happen. And also like, God, thank God this is happening in this, the year of our Lord 2019, because guess what? But I'm happy, you know, it's hard to be mad.
Well, you're having a good, we're having a good time.
We are. And it's great. It's great to be doing this with you, to have this happen at the same time.
Yeah, we were
great.
Both writing on Big Mouth when we found out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were both writing on Big Mouth. I mean, I still remember the first time I ever saw you live.
When was that?
Pine Box Rock Shop.
Oh my God. In Bushwick.
Yeah. It must have been like 2013. You were coming from a Huffington Post panel.
Ooh. She already had it going on, honey.
Yeah. And just so, and there were and of course there were only six people in the audience for this show.
Of course.
Of course. Of course.
Back then I did maximum six. If a seventh showed up, I said, walk out that fucking pine box, honey.
You can't.
Come to the late show. I must maintain eye contact with all six people in this room. It is so nice to, like, just thinking about that time and now this time. Like, this is such a fucking loosey-goosey business, but it's nice to look around and, like, people, everyone's... At that time, I was also so obsessed with, like, the way... And not... I'm really in a cool way obsessed, but, like, the way that I would come up, you know? And envisioning that it'll be this, or it'll be this, or, like... And just how unpredictable for both of it. Like, just the... Yeah. The flow of it is interesting.
Well, this is certainly not how I imagined it would go for me.
How did you imagine it?
3 or 4 years ago. Well, you know, I consider myself like a writer first.
Yeah.
And I really thought that I would sell a show, which I did. And then I thought the show would go and it didn't. And like, I thought I was going to be the next fucking like Issa Rae or Lena Dunham, or someone who just like popped on television with like this hot new show. And like.
So I imagine then you mourn that. The Fox show in a bigger way than Sunnyside.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing really to mourn. So the Fox show, then Comedy Central, when that didn't go at Fox, Comedy Central bought it. And then Comedy Central, after having me write several more scripts for like half a season of the show, decided not to pick it up or shoot any of it. And then that, so like,
So it was just like this elongated.
It was an elongated thing of like, I spent so many hours writing half a season of a show that now no one will ever get to see because there's so much money sunk into it at this point that I would have to be a megastar for any network to touch it at this point. And so like, not only did I like do the work, but it will never be seen probably. It was also like, you know, I sold that when I was like 28. Yeah, 28. And so and playing and intending to play myself at like 23, 24.
Yeah.
So like now it's even like, okay, maybe eventually I do shoot to superstardom and then somebody, you know, HBO Max wants to spend $1 million for this show. I'm not going to be able to play that part anymore.
You can't do a Pen 15.
I can't. I don't think a 38-year-old Pen 15ing 24 is as powerful as a 30-year-old playing an eighth grader, unfortunately. But hey, maybe we'll see how it goes. Maybe I'll just do that Gemini Man technology. Have you seen the trailer for that?
No, what is
Will Smith playing himself at his current age and also playing himself at 28.
Ooh.
But they just like CGI'd his face, his like
onto a 28-year-old
Fresh Prince face onto his now body, and it's just like it looks so fucked up. It looks so fucked up.
Do you think you'll do plastic surgery?
I don't think I'll need to.
Yeah, bitch.
Because of my genes.
You look really good.
I might get a little Botox. Who knows?
Before we started rolling, we were talking about race and being like feeling feelings about people that overlap with you, or how do I describe it without talking so much shit about people that have names?
I think like it is this like I this there is like this we're in this moment of great solidarity, I think, amongst like both people of color and queer people in this industry where we're, where I think even when I started, right as I was I was starting, and I started probably after you started. You've been doing this for a little bit longer than I have.
I started rolling those jokes on the stage in 72. I started in 2002. I was 16.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you were like a child when you started. A
literal
child.
My parents made me.
I was 22. I started in 2011. So, yeah, you've been doing it practically twice as long as I have. But
no one needs to calculate.
How late? Wait, how long have you been out and doing this, though?
3 years.
No.
I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. He's like, that doesn't
make any
sense.
Into my marriage with Shauna, she begged me to take her to shows. I said, no. I have been out, I'd say when I moved to New York, I was out, in, so like 11 years ago.
Okay, so yeah. But so even around that time, I think there was this like sort of energy of like, there's only one spot for us, you know, as like gay people. Or,
you only got one shot to be gay.
Yeah, and like that was sort of like it. And it's so nice to like genuinely be in a place now where like, I can celebrate Bowen getting cast on SNL.
Because it doesn't take away
from... Because it doesn't take... It's not like... It's neither of us... Quite honestly, it's better for my career because now Bowen is tied up in the fucking bowels of 30 Rock for the next 7 years and there's a million parts he won't be able to take from me. But like also his success, like the thing is I genuinely believe this. Like people... Yes, Bowen is going to be like 10 times more famous than I am, and so people are going to start writing parts for him that he won't be able to take and I'm going to gobble them up. It's the same thing with like when John Early was like breaking in such a huge way. Literally the amount of auditions I've gone on that were written for John Early that John could not or would not take. It's like
that's
it really is like this weird like rising tide, you know, raises all boats situation. But that being said, like we're in that area where we can support each other, where most of my friends are gay comedians or comedians of color of some sort. It does kind of suck when like one of us sucks as a person.
That's what we were talking about. So that's the, to me, it's like, I think what I'm learning right now is like, I have this attitude where I am so wanting to fill my rising tide boat with everybody that looks and feels like me. If you're brown, if you're gay, if you're just a person of color, or queer in any way, I'm like, fucking get on. But lately there have been some disappointments. And it's not like it's good to lift up your people, but at the same time, just because someone looks or just because someone has a demographic crossover with you doesn't necessarily mean they're your people.
Right.
That someone that doesn't look or like demo wise the same as you. And I know this already. I know that like I have friends that like Jean-Luc, this dude that's on my show is like such a like bro. And you would never think that like I felt the 1,000 hearts that I feel for him. Like so many things that he says are like, I'm like, wow, you are truly a basic straight man. But I have so much love for him. And I feel like our hearts are much more similar than someone that could be brown and gay and, you know, my age and have the exact...
Yeah, I mean, it is this like forced identification that we're being asked to have a lot of times. And I and here's the thing, and like we're talking about this from like an interpersonal level of like meeting people in the industry who are, we want to be on their team but they suck as people, and that sucks. And there's like, it's like a twist of the knife. Like anytime you meet a sucky person in this industry, it's like being stabbed. But then to meet a sucky person that is also like a member of your tribe is like a twist of that knife.
And then you feel like you're being represented, but you're not.
But then you feel, and then you feel bad for feeling that way. And you feel like, oh God, like you feel guilty. But here's the other thing. Mm-hmm. This is on us too. Like I get so much blowback from fucking gay Asian people who do not feel like I'm a good representation for the community.
Yes.
And so like, and the thing is like, they should not have, whenever
don't
I see
that on me,
whenever I see that, whenever I see, because like I'm on like a gay Asian Reddit thread, okay? And like I'm on there for my personal reasons
because
I'm a gay Asian person, and a lot of the stuff on there is just happens to be applicable to my life, so I like it. And I also happen to see posts about me on this Reddit, and sometimes it's supportive and sometimes it fucking sucks because I read shit from people who are like, this guy sucks, it sucks that he's like the only one. And I literally got on there on one of these threads that was like, this guy sucks, and I was like, literally here are like seven other people you could support then. Here are seven other gay Asian people that you should check out and see if maybe one of them has something for you. Because like, that's the thing. Like, I don't think you should settle for just me or just Bowen. Like, we should be demanding every version of you and I to be represented on the fucking screen. Like, it should not stop at that.
Yes.
And so like, yes, do that. But it also does suck to read because it's like an extra ad, because nobody's like looking at Dane Cook. Like, people either like Dane Cook or they don't like Dane Cook. Nobody is looking at Dane Cook and being like, also, it sucks. He's bad for white men.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the thing is, I wish people could just stop at like, that's not to my taste. Joel Kim Booster is not to my taste, or he is to my taste. But it also, not only am I not to some people's taste, but they have to make it about like me specifically damaging the community.
Yeah, you're right.
And that sucks. Like, that is not something that our white straight cis peers have to like fucking deal with.
And it's not healthy for just making things.
No.
It's not a then great it does make creative
me,
space.
It's another fucking layer of neuroses on top of an already like everyone is crazy in this in comedy.
Yeah.
A little bit. Even the straight white guys are. And then to add like another layer on top of
it. Like, am I representing
people right? And like, listen, it's a responsibility that I take seriously. I do. I don't want to sound flip and be like, I don't fucking care about representing the community, right? Like, I do think about it. But it is like also deeply frustrating to be like worried about it all the time now.
Well, how do we not go on those threads? Because I will read anything that's written about me.
Oh,
I know that
for
everyone, it's like the number one tip of like, you know, anyone who's been acting or been on TV or whatever is like, don't read anything. But like, who actually does it? Who can't?
I've read every single review.
We're in this
every
because we
YouTube
love attention.
Comment. Yeah.
It's like a, like the opposite. It's like a fucking goodie bag of baddie baddies.
Yeah. Well, because the thing is like, I just feel like I'm like, there's just an, it in, there is a segment of my audience that I am just, that is waiting for me to fuck up, that like I know that I'm not that I'm gonna disappoint somebody in this audience eventually, and that sucks. That like weight is on me, like this anxiety of like, I'm writing this Fire Island thing and like it's about being gay and it's in part about being gay and Asian, and I'm like worried already about like, oh my god, like, you know, like, are people gonna see themselves in it? And like,
you just need to see you.
Correct. And well, and that's it. Yeah. I mean, that's how I'm sort of, because when I started out doing comedy, I got all the time from guys in the Chicago open mic scene where it's like, you know, some, you're funny, but some of this isn't relatable. You need to make it more relatable. And it was like, and I did that. I played that game for the first like half of my career. And now like, I'm getting up on stage and I'm like telling these jokes that I know just objectively are funny. And I'm like, who gives a fuck if this is relatable?
Yeah, it's
like,
all about
my life is
connecting.
Not relatable. Yeah. I'm sorry. I live a weird life where I'm going to orgies every weekend. And it's like, that's not relatable to 90% of the people I'm performing for. And it's, and who gives a fuck? Because guess what? Like, I love Bill Burr and none of his life is relatable to me.
Yeah, and also like your relationship to whatever you're talking about, people can relate to the feelings behind it and you being speaking authentically about it. Yeah, you know, I go back to the Bill Burr thing. I like that angle better. Like, nothing he's saying is really like
we have been asked to relate to these like this like straight heteronormative white male like perspective, and like and we've been trained to treat that perspective as like the baseline, the norm.
Yes.
Like that's the sort of broad relatable POV, and like we've been trained to like see that, and so that when we go out and talk about our own shit, it's like I get, it's like, oh man, on one of these fucking threads where people were ripping, like these gay Asian guys were like, this Joel Kim Booster sucks, was like, look at Chappelle talks about stuff that like everyone can relate to.
It's like, what?
And it's like, why? Who said, like, who says, what makes Chappelle's jokes more relatable? Like, you can think they're funnier. That's totally fair. If that's your bag, then like, think they're funnier. But to like ding me on the fact that like all people can appreciate his jokes and only I only talk about being gay and Asian, and it's like, no, I'm talking about dating and I'm talking about moving through the world looking like this. Like, that's this, like, it's so fucked up. And it's frustrating. And clearly, I'm not, I've not moved on to the stage of not giving a shit like we were talking about earlier.
Well, I think you got to, and so do I. But also part of me is like, I've got to find the Reddit about brown queer women. And I it will exists. Be pissed
search,
if I'm not.
Search your fucking name and you'll be really? You'll be furious. I oh don't God. Do that, but like when it comes
well,
up.
I get enough of a kick of like, of a BDSM kick to my ego whenever like Netflix posts a caption or Just for Laughs posts like a caption of my joke. I mean, it is like a fucking jungle of people that truly hate me, my face, my it's like they fucking can't yeah. stand it.
Anytime I'm the fucking like morning routine on Comedy Central social, it's like, oh great, thank you for handing me like a day full of hate.
But you also get followers, like, right?
Yeah it's a double, but you're only focusing on the people who are who
oh
hate
of course
you.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, guess what, from this day forward we don't care about them anymore.
Never.
From this day forward, we say to them,
you ugly, you're ugly, you and your that? Mother ugly, and your sister ugly. You're just plain old ugly.
Epic fail.
Shut up.
You are one pathetic loser.
That's it. That's the one.
That's the one.
Wow, I just love sitting outside, chatting with you on your porch like a fucking...
I know. Do you see the tree?
I do see the tree. Do you think people will know who we're talking about earlier?
On my end or your end?
Just like in general.
I think that the person would never.
Yeah, no, that's totally true.
Find out.
It's totally true. But I loved the idea of people listening and being like, who are they talking about?
Me too. But also, do I talk too much shit?
I mean, we all do. That's fine. That's just like human nature, I think. That's what I need. I need, and my fucking astrology app recently mm-hmm. told me this. I need somebody who doesn't talk shit, who's like very like, not simple, but like uncomplicated in their feelings towards me.
You need like an angelic Mormon?
No, I just need like, I want like, like an
well,
introvert.
Well, now I feel like I obviously talk too much shit if your dream boy doesn't talk shit.
Well, no, I think like I can't remember who I was talking to about this, but like I do think that like you need some of us, at least I need, and this other friend that I was talking to who's also a shit talker. And I feel like most of the people
you
in our circle are shit talkers.
I mean, yeah, I feel like with Shauna, my wife, is good cuz she when I'm talking shit, she will be like, "Okay, calm down."
Yeah.
But she also, I mean, everybody, it's talking shit is giddy giddy.
Yeah. It's therapeutic sometimes.
Yeah. As long as you end it by being like, I only said that because I care about them. And I love them so much. And I just want everyone to be good, you know?
I just want everyone to be the best version of themselves.
Joel, you're the best version of yourself.
No, it's very much not
after
true.
You open your fucking heart to an angelic... little cutie that doesn't talk shit, that has a great body, that comes up behind you and says, I want to fuck you, and then goes in front of you and says, and now you fuck me.
Yeah, that sounds delightful.
But not until you've created your genius series, because that's what you need to do first.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I'm waiting for. I think once I win my first Emmy, that's when I know. I'll know. It's time. Settle down.
From the stage. You'll pick the person from the stage.
Yeah. I'll point at them and say, Andrew Rannells, it's time.
It's you, babe. Is he a crush?
No.
Okay. Who is your crush? You're at the Emmys. You're on stage. You say your acceptance speech. Then you can point.
Charlie Bartlett. Wait, is that who I'm thinking of? I think so. It's the guy from Russian Doll, and he's on... what he's on Tales of the City, but I feel like Charlie Bartlett is the movie. Yeah, that's the movie. Oh god, what's his name?
Charlie Bartlett, if you're out there, I got a deal for you. What's his name?
Charlie Barnett.
Charlie Barnett, if you're out there and you want to live,
and that's
forever,
how you live forever,
dog. Ditch your partner or open it up. Scoop Joel Kim in. make him the primary, scoop out the other guy. Joel, if you're going to give the goody goody listeners one goody goody tip, it could be a deal. It could be a restaurant. Don't make it a restaurant.
Okay. I'm going to give the goody goody tip of something I did today.
Okay.
Because I feel like everyone's concerned about the end of the world. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, the planet's burning. What can we do?
Yes. You know? Give it to me.
And I think, so I'm moving right now. And here's something you probably didn't know. When you bring clothes to the Goodwill, most of them end up in a landfill because your clothes are trash.
No.
And even the Goodwill doesn't want them. So we're creating so much waste by donating clothes to the Goodwill. Unless it's like in really good condition, or, and especially if it's not fast fashion. Because all of your H&M, your Zara's, your Forever 21's, your ASOS, they are not meant to be recycled because they're all shit clothes. And so a lot of them are going into the landfill from the Goodwill. Goodwill is putting out like something like, like truly like 20% of what's being donated to them
is making it into the Goodwill.
So the better thing to do is take it to a textile recycling plant that will actually recycle it. Now that sounds hard. They're not always everywhere, but here's the thing. H&M, you drop off a bag, they will take it to a textile recycling
plant
for you.
That is really cool.
It is so easy to do. I did it today.
So bring your old clothes to H&M.
It was so humiliating to walk through the fucking Beverly Center with a suitcase full of two of them and then like another giant canvas bag full of the other four of these like little white garbage bags I had full of clothes. And I dropped them off. And they will give you a 15% off coupon for every bag. But I didn't. I said, I don't need them. That's how I got in this situation in the first place, is buying your shitty ass single-use like clothes. But yeah,
it's like going to AA and they give you a drink ticket.
Yeah. And again, it's like this little thing of like, it just like gave me a slightly more peace of mind to know that like I wasn't contributing
to. Also, I want to go buy this like recycled textile hodgepodge fabric. Yeah. That seems like really cool.
It's a lot of it's turned into like insulation for homes and stuff like that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Ooh, that's a spicy tip.
Joel, I hope that one day your old fucking clothes are the insulation to my home.
I hope so too.
I love you.
I love you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. So Ursula has just landed in Los Angeles. How was your flight, Mom?
Very uneventful.
Really? Did you watch a movie?
Yes, I watched that movie. I forgot the name. Show something. Elton John.
An Elton John movie?
Well, it's about his life. It's about his, like, the way he started his career. Unfortunately, the earplugs that I had, only one side worked. So I think
when that happens.
I'm going to have to watch the movie again. It's quite interesting, actually. He had quite a sad childhood.
Where did he grow up?
In England. Probably London, I'm not sure. I couldn't hear everything.
And why was it sad?
Well, his father was not around a lot, and the mother was very negative, you know.
Sound familiar?
And then as he became famous, people took advantage of him. You know, they wanted him to perform and be crazy, and you know how he was dressed and everything, and they didn't mind him being on drugs and on alcohol. And it looks like he checked himself into some rehab and, you know, became sober.
Did they deal with, I'm sure they dealt with his sexuality?
That too, yeah.
Was it did people encourage him not to come out?
Not really. But I think people pretended to be his friend or maybe even have a relationship with him just so that, you know, he would trust them, you know. Especially one guy. See, that's the thing. I couldn't follow everything because I couldn't hear everything because only one side was working. And also, these screens are so tiny, you really don't see that well what's going on. I need to see it on a big screen, like on at least a big
TV. You really
TV.
Can't see it, even with your glasses?
No, but it's a small, small screen, right?
I know, but
it's tiny. The screens are tiny nowadays, you know.
Okay, so fake relationships. And then did it end with him finding love?
Well, at the end, they just show some pictures, like real pictures of him with his partner, and they adopted a child. I don't know if they adopted more than one child. And I think it looks like he turned everything around and had a good career and a good life, you know.
So That's some good connective tissue to the episode. Today was with Joel Kim Booster, who also booked a pilot. He's on an NBC show called Sunnyside, which just moved to Hulu. But he's Asian, and he was adopted by a Mormon family outside of Chicago.
Wow.
And they were, I mean, I know from talking to him, I don't think we talked about it on the podcast, but they were, I mean, they were like Mormon, I'm pretty sure, or like some kind of religion with that, that like they kind of
conservative.
Yeah. Very conservative. Exactly.
Yeah. And is he gay?
He's gay. And he's like, oh my God, if you listen to the episode, he's like, he's like living his life the way he wants to live it. He's like in a relationship with a couple in San Francisco right now. We were kind of debating about polyamory where I was like, it doesn't work. And he's like, well, but like for two men, I do believe for two men, it does, like, I've seen it.
Mm. Aren't Mormons allowed
to be polyamorous?
No.
Many husbands. No, many wives.
Yeah, Mormons, right?
Yeah, but that's just like a patriarchal thing where like men are kings of the castle. Mm-hmm. It's not like a truly open thing. Have you ever known anyone like when you and dad, like the 70s was supposed to be about swinging. Did people do that?
Well, we were not in that group.
You're kidding me.
Not really, no.
No, but like, you don't have to be in the group to know that that's happening. Were you aware of that happening?
I know that once we were invited somewhere and we didn't go, but it sounded like it was going to be some kind of a, I don't know what kind
of. Like, what was your hint? How did you know that's
I don't know. You'll have to ask Dad. That's a long time ago, but there was something there, you know. I don't remember really. We didn't go, you know. But it sounded like there was going to be different partners or switching or something going on there.
Did you guys consider it?
No, never. At least not me. You could ask Dad if he did.
All right, let me ask Dad.
Yeah, okay.
I have no idea. I have no link in my head with this guy.
But how did you, like, you remember and you remember.
I remember, yeah, yeah, I remember it, but incident, I don't know how, like, what the connection
was. We didn't really follow
I was
up.
Not interested, but yeah. Were you interested?
No, we didn't really follow up.
Yeah. Just curious.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
It wasn't us, Bina, you know.
Yeah.
You guys still wouldn't open up your relationship?
No. Never.
Why?
I just...
Oh my.
I don't know. It just doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah, I love my wife and I don't want to lose her, right? That's the end of it. That was the beginning of it and that was the end of it.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Engineered and mastered by Alex Sarche. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.